Good afternoon, everyone. This coming Shabbos, we have the great privilege to read Parshas Naso, the second Parsha in Chumash Bamidbar, and the Torah of this week's Parsha is chock full of incredible details. The Parsha begins continuing on a little bit of the previous theme that we saw in Parshas Bamidbar, detailing the various obligations of some of the Levitic families, specifically with transporting different parts of the Mishkan. Because, as you know, the Mishkan, or known in English as the Tabernacle, was a modular building. It had to be able to be put up and deconstructed relatively quickly and easily. But despite the fact that it was easy, quote-unquote, to put up and take down, there were many pieces, and some of them quite heavy, some of them requiring groups of people to transport them. In fact, some of them so heavy that there were certain families which were given wagons in order to be able to transport the items in a more efficient way. So the Torah begins by detailing some of the various responsibilities of the different families in transporting the different parts of the Mishkan. The Torah then goes on to discuss a fascinating idea. This is in Perek Hei, chapter 5, where the Torah says, "Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Limor." Hashem said to Moshe, saying, "Tzav es bnei Yisrael v'yishalchu min ha-machaneh kol tzarua v'chol zav v'chol tamei l'nefesh." In a nutshell, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu that they have to send forth from the camp, send out of the camp, anyone who is tamei, anyone who is ritually impure. Now, there are various ways in which one could contract tumah. There's some types of tumahs which are internal, some which are external. But in general, when a person becomes tamei, tamei doesn't mean evil. Tamei doesn't mean bad. Tamei, we translate as impure, but perhaps more precisely means lack of purity. And yet God commands Moshe Rabbeinu that if someone is ritually impure, if someone is tamei, they are not permitted to reside within the camps of Klal Yisrael. Understand that the nature of the setup of the camps is in the middle you had what we call Machane Shechina, which was the Mishkan. Around that Machane Levia, the Levitic families, and around that Machane Yisrael. Depending on the type of tumah, depending on the type of ritual purity that one had, determined which camps they were excluded from. If someone had a heightened form of tumah, for example, someone came in contact with a corpse, a dead body, that's the highest level of tumah, they had to exit all of the camps. Someone who had saras, which we loosely translate as leprosy, the punishment for speaking Lashon Hara, slander, one also had to exit all of the camps. But yet, there were other forms of impurity, what we call tumas sheretz. A person comes in contact with a rodent. For that, they didn't have to leave all of the camps, only some of the camps. But the message is quite profound. What Hashem is telling us is that in order to maintain the sanctity of the camp, we have to conduct ourselves in a state of tara. We have to be pure. In order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to reside in our midst, you see, my friends, the nature of our dwelling in the desert was God-centric. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in the middle. The Mishkan was in the middle. We camped all around the Mishkan. And that's the way we want to live, not just as we lived in the desert. We want to live that way today. Our goal is always to keep Hashem in the middle, always to keep our Mishkan, our mini Beis HaMikdash, our personal Beis HaMikdash, our Kiddusha, our Shechina in the middle. But in order to do that, the camp has to be holy. In order to do that, the camp, the individuals, have to be kadosh. And this is an incredible lesson for us. Even just if you think about it in terms of our homes, what do we allow in our homes? What influences do we allow in our homes? Our homes today, for each of us, is like our own miniature Beis HaMikdash. It's our own miniature Mishkan. And if we want the Shechina, if we want God's presence to reside in our homes, then we have to be careful about the influences that we allow in. And when I say influences, I don't just mean external influences. I mean in our homes, we have to be so careful how we talk. In our homes, we have to be so careful about the language we use. In our homes, we have to be careful how we treat our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our fathers, our spouses, our children. We have to be so careful with our relationships because the measure of Kiddusha, the measure of holiness in our home, is determined by the behaviors we exhibit in our home. And if we create holiness in our home, then Hashem feels comfortable residing there. But if, God forbid, the home is not holy, if, God forbid, the camp is not holy, then unfortunately the Shekhinah, God's divine presence, no longer feels welcome. That was the message for our ancestors in the desert, and it's our message today now. In the desert, if you were Tamei, you were sent out of the camps. In our present day and age, if we're Tamei, the Shekhinah, God's presence, leaves our camp. But the amazing part about Tumah, about ritual impurity, about spiritual uncleanliness, is that it is not a permanent state. Even if a person is Tamei, they could turn it around. Even if a person is Tamei, they could change their circumstances. Even if a person is Tamei, they have the ability to regain their lost Tara. The Parsha then goes on to speak about the various gifts given to the Kohen. We know that, again, the tribe of Levi was dedicated to the service of Hashem. So how do they earn their livelihood? Where do they get their parnasa from? They were supported by the rest of the Jewish people. We, the Yisraelim, have obligations of trumos and maisros, truma to the Kohen, maisra to the Levi, and these are parts of our crop that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says don't belong to us. They belong to the Kohen, they belong to the Levi. Now, the interesting right I have is I can choose which Kohen to give it to or which Levi to give it to. That is my right as the farmer, as the owner of the produce, to decide who is going to go to. But each and every Yisrael has an obligation to separate out from their crop a portion for the Kohen, a portion for the Levi. We have a similar yet very distinct process today. We still have a form of Maiser. We call it Maiser Kisafim, where we go ahead and we take, if possible, a tenth of our earnings and we set it aside for tzedakah. Now, again, that tzedakah is not per se limited to the Kohanim. That tzedakah goes to the poor. That tzedakah helps to support Torah institutions. That tzedakah helps to support a variety of needs. But the same way that we were obligated to give gifts to the Kohanim Levim, we are still obligated in some way to give gifts from our income in order to support those individuals and those causes who need our assistance. The Torah then goes on and discusses the interesting topic of the Nazir. The Nazir is a fascinating person. The Nazir is someone who goes ahead and takes a vow not to drink wine, not to cut his hair, and not to come in contact with a corpse, with a dead body. Why would someone do this? The Nazir is someone who is looking for a life of greater holiness. How does he achieve that? Now, the truth is, the backstory really is that the Nazir very often was someone who got a little too wrapped up in the material life of this world, a little bit too wrapped up in the materialism. He got carried a bit away with some of the physical pleasures. Perhaps he got a little bit lost in putting an overemphasis on his own appearance, on how he looked. And so what happened? And so the Nazir doesn't drink wine. Wine represents physical pleasure. By abstaining from wine, what he's saying is, I'm no longer going to allow physical pleasures to be the dominant piece of my existence. He doesn't cut his hair. By not cutting his hair, he's essentially giving up certain personal grooming habits. Hair is very important. I can't speak to this directly, but I've heard that hair is very important. A person takes a lot of pride in how their hair looks. So the Nazir says, I'm not going to put my emphasis on my external appearance. I'm going to put my emphasis on my internal appearance. What about coming in contact with the dead? What the Nazir is saying is, I need to devote my energies, I need to devote my time to focusing on how to live. I need to engage in life-affirming activities. Now is not the time to take care of the dead. There are others who will see to that. I'll have the opportunity to do that when my Nazirite vow comes to an end. But for now, my sacred mission is to try to figure out how to lead a more impactful life. And so the Torah goes through the process of the Nazir. But one of the interesting things, which I'll highlight to you, is that when the Nazir finishes his Nazirite vow, he has to bring a Karban Chatos, a sin offering. And the question is obvious. Why does he have to bring a sin offering? After all, he hasn't done anything wrong. Just the opposite. Here is a man who's trying to live a life of greater holiness. What's better than that? And the Talmud quotes the opinion of Rabbi Elazar HaKafar. And Rabbi Elazar says, he did sin. What's his sin? Is that he refrained from wine. What's the sin in refraining from wine? There's no mitzvah to drink wine. So the rabbis are trying to teach us something very profound. God does not want us to deny ourselves physical pleasures. God does not want us to deny ourselves enjoyment from this world. Hashem created this world for us to enjoy, for us to partake of. But Hashem wants us to partake of it responsibly. Hashem wants us to use every physical thing, but somehow to use it as a bridge and as a form of holiness. Hashem says, you want to have a nice house? Go and have a nice house. But make sure that you open your doors for hospitality, for achnasas arachim. Make sure that you open your home to others. You want to drive a nice car? Drive a nice car. But if you see someone who needs a ride, then make sure to be a bal chesed and offer them that. You want to make a lot of money? Kadosh Baruch Hu should bless all of us that we should make a lot of money. But make sure you realize that you are the custodian for Hashem's wealth. It's not yours. Hashem is granting it to you to be able to do something meaningful and magnificent with it. So use that money to help others. Use that money to make the world a little bit better. Hashem doesn't want us to run away from the material or physical world. He wants us to embrace it, but he wants us to embrace it in a way that serves as a bridge to greater spirituality. See, sometimes the danger with materialism or physical pleasures is that they push us away from Hashem. So the Nazir is someone who goes to an extreme. He says, no physical pleasures. I'm just going to focus on my service of Hashem. That might be a fine approach for a little while, but it's certainly not a good approach for life. Therefore, at the end of his Nazirite vow, his Neder Nazirus, he has to bring a sin offering. Yes, he's done something meaningful and good in order to make himself holier, but it's not the way Hashem wants us to live. Hashem doesn't want us to run from the material world. Hashem doesn't want us to deny the physical world. Hashem wants us to embrace it, to use it, but ultimately to figure out a way to use it to bring us closer to Hashem. The parasha then goes on. In this week's parasha, we learn about the Berachas Kohanim, the beautiful brachos that Hashem gave to Aaron, and that Aaron is supposed to use to bless the Jewish people. Yivarecha Hashem v'yishmerecha. Hashem should bless you and should watch over you. Ya'er Hashem panav eilecha v'yichunecha. Hashem should shine his face upon you and give you chen, give you favor. Yisa Hashem panav eilecha v'yasem lecha shalom. May God raise his face towards you and grant you peace. And the rabbis point out so beautifully that the last part of this blessing is that Hashem should give us peace. Because as we all know, a person could have all the blessings in the world. You could have money, and you could have fame, and you could have honor, and you could have family. You could have all the wonderful things we all daven for, health every single day. But if you don't have shalom, if you don't have peace, peace with your fellow man, peace with your family, peace with your children, peace with your spouse, peace with your friends, peace in the world, then the truth is all of our brachos are lacking just a little bit. We await that day when Hashem is going to give us that bracha of true shalom, not just for us, but for all mankind. The parsha ends with an incredible detailed description of the gifts brought by the Nesiim, the tribal princes, on the day that the Mizbeach, the altar, was dedicated. Torah goes through in great detail each and every offering brought by each of the tribal princes. Now, the amazing part is you'll look inside the Chumash, you'll see that each of the tribal princes, each of the Nesiim, brought an identical gift. Each and every one does. So the Torah restates essentially the same thing 12 times. Each and every one of the tribal princes brought the same animals, the same gold, the same silver, everything the same. So it's amazing to see how many psukim, an incredible number of verses, devoted to going through tribal prince after tribal prince, even though all of their offerings are exactly the same. And the Torah is teaching us an incredible lesson, that although the offerings were the same, two incredible lessons, although the offerings were the same, God understood that each of the tribal princes, each of the Nesiim, had a different mindset, had different kavanos. Hashem didn't just look at the gift, but Hashem looked at their thoughts. Hashem looked into their heart as well. And this is so important for us, because in Judaism, we have many obligations and many behaviors. And sometimes we just focus on the physical behavior, getting the mitzvah done, the mechanistic details done. But we forget, as the Talmud says, Rachmana libaboy, Hashem doesn't just want our actions. Hashem wants our heart. It's true, having heart without actions is not enough. But having actions without heart is also not enough. See, even though all of the Nesiim were doing the same thing, at the end of the day, what distinguished them might not have been the goat or the sheep or the bull or the ram or the gold or the silver. That was all the same. But each of them brought something different emotionally. Each of them brought something different spiritually. And this is an important idea, because the truth is, in Judaism, our mitzvos are very, we all do the same things. We daven the same Shmona Esrei. We put on the same tefillin. We light the same Shabbos candles. We blow the same shofar. We sit in the same sukkah. So, okay, we might decorate things differently. We might practice things a little bit differently, but it's the same mitzvos. But even though we live in the same Judaic framework, each of us are different people. We relate to different mitzvos in different ways. We have different intentions for different things that we do. We relate to God in different ways, even if we're all doing the same mitzvos. And it's that individuality that Hashem loves so much. It's that individuality that Hashem finds so important. We might all be doing the same things, but it's our job to create a special and unique relationship with Hashem, each of us different. I might put on the same tefillin as you do. I might observe the same Shabbos as you do. But my relationship with Hashem is and must be fundamentally different than yours. Because you're one person, I'm a different person. I have my life experiences. I have my strengths. I have my weaknesses. And as such, I connect to Hashem in one way. You have your strengths, your weaknesses, and you must connect to Hashem in a different way. We might all live in the same Judaic framework, but we have to find our individual relationship with beautiful, restful, and meaningful Shabbos.